The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
$14.90 WGCH. This is Kerry Lutz. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. Back with me again is the mercenary geologist. We're going to do something new today. We're doing a monthly commodities and market wrap-up, and I think you're going to find some interesting trends started at the beginning of the year. Mickey, welcome back to the Financial Survival Network.
Thanks a lot, Kerry.
We're living in interesting times. I keep saying that. I'm starting to become a broken record. But the market recap, really interesting month, January, isn't it?
It certainly was. It was hard for speculators in any markets to lose money over the month. Everything was up, so it was one of the best Januaries ever. We saw the broader base indices, and that would be the Dow Jones, up 4%, S&P 500 up 3%, big board on Toronto up 4%. But what was most interesting to me in all of this was the Global Emerging Market Index up 10%, the Toronto Venture up 10%, and the NASDAQ up 8%. So my conclusion from that is that money is going into higher risk markets. People have started to lose their fear of global economic crisis, perhaps the euro debt. Perhaps it's just become an older story now. But what we're seeing over the last month are people, investors, and that would be from the small to the big institutions, are starting to put some higher risk money into the market.
So you think maybe people have become desensitized to all the different crises happening, and they just say, all right, so maybe the world's going to end, but maybe it isn't, so I better get on with my life?
Yeah, and they're probably starting to become fearful of missing the next big thing. So, you know, the psychology of the markets, lots of people trade with emotion, and so emotions can flip-flop very quickly, and as you and I have talked before, that's one thing you never want to do, is trade with emotion.
Yeah, so it all comes down to fear and greed. So let's take a look at some of those markets. The Dow and the S&P, the NASDAQ, Toronto. Where did we wind up this month?
Well, they were all up, as I just reviewed.
Right, and the Dow is up 4%, and then we looked at the NASDAQ, it was up 8%. Toronto, TSX.
Toronto market was up 4%.
Right.
And then the more speculative markets, which would be Emerging Market Index and the Toronto Venture Index, both up 10%.
10%, which is pretty interesting. And then we saw gold go up another 10%, right?
No, we did. And all metals, again, were up over the month. Platinum was the winner by far, up 20%, but it was pretty beaten up at the end of the year, and it trading right now somewhere in the 1585, 1590 range. So you could have bought platinum at the beginning of the year, last day of the year, at $1,400 an ounce. Palladium did not follow suit. Oftentimes those metals trade in tandem. Palladium only up 3% over the month. And that's quite curious. It may have to do with, as we talked previously, in platinum-palladium ratio was out of whack. So that came a little bit higher, which we had predicted. Interestingly enough, U.S. car sales reached a high since early 2008. So that's the main driver of the palladium market. And it looks like what we saw over the month was an adjustment of the platinum price upward to reflect a more historic ratio. Silver did quite well, too, up 18% over the month.
Yeah, we talked about platinum about a month ago, and you commented that there's only a few times post-World War II where platinum has sold for cheaper than gold, and invariably it reverses and then is in for a big rally. So that could well be the start of it this time, huh?
Well, I'm not... Your point's well taken, Kerry, but I'm not real sure if that's what happened, because gold again was up 10%. So we did see platinum make a gain, but it's still trading way below the historic ratios. You know, still way below one, somewhere probably around the 0.9 range, 0.99 to 0.95. So it's got a ways to go yet.
Yeah, and then, of course, there was the biggest loser of the month, natural gas, right?
Yeah, down 16%. It took a big hit today, the end of the month. Spot price down 20%, futures down 25%, trading in backwardation. Not quite sure how to make that. Some of it certainly has to do with the very mild winter in the northeast U.S. for the most part. And then what we're looking at with a future price of March to May futures for natural gas are trading in backwardation right now. So usually that indicates that supplies are tight. In this case, I think it is a seasonal play because, you know, March is really the end of the heating season for the most part of the U.S., and so I think what we're seeing there are lower natural gas prices in the futures because of seasonal trends coming into spring, which is historically a low period of time for natural gas.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and oil's kind of flat. It's, you know, it's in that $100 range, and 113, I guess, for the Brent. And, you know, it looks like we're in a range there.
Yes, it does. And the WTI was basically flat over the month. Started at $98+, and it ended at $98+. So flat, but still a good market. I mean, I don't know many oil producers that are complaining with $98 oil at this point.
Yeah, even if it's hard to get at oil, at $98, you're going to be profitable virtually anywhere on the planet. So,
well, I would certainly hope so.
And what about copper? We said up
10%. Well, copper is the metal that I am most bullish on. Rarely have I ever seen fundamentals, supply-demand fundamentals, for copper to be so bullish. Supply deficit balance has been basically flat over the last 4 years. So copper is very sensitive to supply disruptions or demand destruction, strikes on the one hand versus falling economies or natural disasters on the other. What I really watch a lot, and I talked last year about a year ago, supply-demand fundamentals were out of whack, and I predicted a correction. Now I'm predicting a bullish time for copper in the short term. Warehouse inventories worldwide have been screaming down. Material is moving out of warehouses, surplus material, and being scheduled for delivery. And the cancel warrants, cancel warrant is copper that is on its way out of the warehouse. So they trade in lots, warrant lots, and once that's canceled, then that means there's a buyer and that's going out. And that hit something on the order of a historic 8-year high. We saw a spike of warrants at 24% the end of last week, and that's up from 2 to average of 15 over the last month or so, and then the spike up. So and a lot of copper is moving out of warehouses right now, and we've seen that reflected in the price from 350 at the beginning of the year to about 385 today.
Wow. And you see the scrap market's heating up. It seems like in the cities, especially Detroit, anything copper is ripped out of vacant homes wherever they can find it, and they're redeeming it. So that's definitely part of the trend, is the uptick in the scrap market there, huh?
Yeah, and very little of that's going to be illegally obtained copper.
Yeah,
but what we've seen over the last couple of years is the scrap market has increasingly made up for mine shortfall. 16.5 million tons of mined copper last year, and a worldwide demand of a bit over 20 million tons. So at high prices like this, when you're looking at copper at $3.50 to $4, which I'm very comfortable with, you're going to get a lot of scrap coming into the market. So we need to have more copper mines. Those, for the most part, big copper mines are not on the horizon. So scrap's been making up the mine supply deficit,
which will only go on for so long, just like we see with gold, scrap going down.
Well, it's a little bit different than gold, because gold is hoarded and copper is used, but there's plenty of scrap copper around. And so I look for this market to be in a delicate supply-demand balance again this year, and I think that's bullish for copper.
Yeah, and that could translate to the copper mining stocks too, huh?
I think so, yes.
So, all right, hey, this is great. Really enjoyed the overview, because so often we just look ahead and we don't look backwards to see where we've been, and you lose perspective, and markets can really get away from you when you don't have that historic perspective, right?
Well, absolutely. You know, I'm a geologist. Geologists say the present is key to the past. So in this instance, we're looking at the present, we're looking at the past, and trying to project toward the future.
Yeah, will past be prologue? That's always the question.
Yes.
So you've got an event planned for this weekend, huh?
Well, I do, Kerry, and we talked last time about we had launched mercenarygeologist.asia, and so our first marketing effort on that is going to be in the Vancouver area on Saturday, the Global Chinese Financial Forum, a bilingual conference with immediate translation of speaker topics in both languages, Mandarin and English, and I will be giving a talk called Bull Market Fundamentals of Copper, Gold, and Uranium to a Chinese and English-speaking audience, and we're going to have an exhibit booth. So for anybody in the Vancouver area, I would encourage them to come by.
Hey, well, you know, close to 15% of the Financial Survival Network's audience is Canadian. So Canadians out there, if you're in the Vancouver area, watching Mickey speak is always interesting and enlightening. Anyway, Mickey, where do we find you again?
Mercenarygeologist.com or mercenarygeologist.asia.
All right. For those who can speak Chinese, it's kind of a cool cutting-edge concept. And Mickey, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Hey, good luck on that event, and brush up on your Mandarin.
I'm bilingual, but that's only in Spanish, so I will. Luckily, everything I'm going to be doing is in English, but we're looking forward to this event, and I look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks, Karen.
Yeah, definitely let us know how it goes, because that's where the action is in Asia.
Certainly is.
All right, take care, Mick.
Thank you.